Entrepreneur, author, and financial consultant Mark Bernstein helps high-performing entrepreneurial business owners create a vision for the future and follow through on their goals and intentions. Ange Honorato is a business growth strategist who blends psychology and business together to create conscious leaders and business owners who impact the world. Founders Forum is a radio show podcast sharing the real stories behind entrepreneurship as founders discover more about themselves while providing valuable lessons and some fun and entertainment for you. Now, here's Mark and Ange.
Good morning, America. How are you? This is our first show of 2024, so we welcome our guest this morning, Christina Taylor, who goes by Chris. We'll meet her in a minute. And we also have sitting in our second guest of the year, Sean Gilfillan, who is Gilfillan.
There you go.
I know him pretty well at this point, but I still don't know his last name well. So Sean is with us this morning, and of course, Ange Honorato is here. Good morning, Ange.
Good morning. I can't believe it's a new year.
So our topic, we always start out with a topic of the day, and this is a great day to talk about New Year's resolutions. And I just would love to have your impressions of them. And this is a little loaded, so I'm going to ask Chris first. Okay. So how do you deal with New Year's resolutions, if at all?
Well, I think I set them more as goals for the year, and I do expect that there's going to be unexpected things that come up. So I try not to hold too fast to them, but I do try and put myself in a direction. And this year, I just want to try and get myself poised to grow my company. So,
Ange, I'll ask you next. What's your outlook on
Resolution. Yeah, so I'm also not a fan, and maybe it's just the word resolution. I feel like it's too finite, too static.
Stealing my thunder.
It's like it's too definite, you know. If you do this, then, and I think it's just something made up by the gyms, you know, to get you to come back. And, yeah, I like goals, intentions, something that's movable throughout the year, and you kind of move the needle little baby steps along the way.
Sean might say that the cigarette companies came up with goals and intentions to get away from resolutions.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Not good for selling cigarettes. Sean, how about you? I'll let you be the clincher. I'm not going to have anything to add to this.
That's so all right. I think New Year's resolutions can happen at any time. You know, you never know through the year when things come up, and you want to start something new. There's always right now, and just kind of keep things moving through the year.
So give it a little color. Tell me the way you said it to me last night, which was great.
So, a New Year's resolution can happen right now and right now and right now. And you got 365 days in your new year every single day of the year.
Yep, I like it.
Oh, I think I'm going to adopt that.
So you just have to track them.
Who says January 1st, the beginning of the year anyway? It's all made up.
It's all made up. I agree with that. But anyway, look, whatever works, right? Whatever helps. So Chris does them. I do my annual intentions for the year. So I call them intentions rather than resolutions because I do think it's kind of final. But intentions allows you the ability to shift and to amend as you go, which I think as entrepreneurs we've all found we need to do. You can't just stay static. It doesn't usually work. But the idea is we're in a new year. It's going to be a good year, I hope, despite all the news every day that you hear. There's a lot of good out there. There's a lot of good things going on in our economy, which gets a bad rap. There's a lot of good things going on in business. There's a lot of good things going on with people developing. And I do think, and we've talked about this a little bit, I think whatever is going on indicates some kind of shift. All the bad stuff is leading to something better. I don't know what that means, but you guys agree? You're all nodding your heads.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, so change isn't a bad thing. Change is often a good thing, if not always. So Christina Taylor, president and majority shareholder of American Tenant Screen and Verify Protect. And her cell number is, no, I'm kidding. she's in person with us in the radio station today, as is Sean. And in our next show, we'll introduce Sean more formally. Chris began her career in 1989 with American Tenant Screen. And she's not a founder in the traditional sense. So we're going to talk about this a little bit, which I like this story. But she ascended through the ranks. So she's a visionary leader. So going back to 1997, she pioneered internet-based tenant background screening. She catapulting ATS, which is American Tenant Screen, ahead of competitors and expanding their clientele nationwide. In 2007, she was named president. And under her guidance, the company evolved to include employee background screening and introduced Verify protect.com, seamlessly integrating employment background screening into the hiring process. So she's now owner of ATS, right? A partial owner and founder of Verify Protect, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So welcome, Chris.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Sure. So we're thrilled to have you here. I like your story because, and we're gonna have another thought for the next show, which you'll also be on Sean's show. But your story begins with wanting to go to college, right?
Correct.
And
yeah.
Why don't you take it from there?
So I wanted to go to college, but we couldn't afford it. We weren't we were having some trouble. And so I started working, trying to work my way through college. And I went to Delaware County Community College and paying my way. And then I wanted to get into, another university. I tried for St. Joe's. I took a class there. But it was very expensive. So, and as I was working, I kind of stumbled across this company that was a startup, American Tenant Screen. They were out of Narberth, right above the Narberth Movie Theater. So hopefully this is local, so people know what I'm talking about.
Near the Greeks, too, right?
Yes, yeah. Right, but not too far from the Greeks at all. Yeah, so, it was an as-is space. And I started working there, but it was just fascinating to me. So, and the other owners, they had started the business, but they were what you might call now serial entrepreneurs. So they were starting other businesses. And so as they were, trying out other types of businesses, they really need someone to take over the day-to-day. So I saw a great opportunity in that. And they recognized that I was able to do that. And so it kind of took off from there. So
what started as a need became a creation of yours, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I think that's so great.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something else?
I was just going to say, then I kind of ended up, I did end up taking a few more courses, but then I was like, this is really where I want to be. So then I just devoted myself to ATS.
It's the University of Real Life,
yes.
Which I think is what most entrepreneurs really excel at, because you have to wear so many hats and just make it through the day and grow the business. So I love that too.
Sean, you're a graduate of the University of Life as well, correct?
Still consider myself a student.
A student, right. Me too. And I've been at it a long time. Still, me too.
When's the end?
There is no end. Hopefully there's no end, right? That's the idea. So Chris, along the way, I know you probably ran into an obstacle here and there, right? Can you think of any that might have influenced later outcomes that might have helped influence your career?
Well, I mean, as you mentioned, like the internet, like the coming of the internet was really a big, it's technology, has been a driver, which I think is a driver in a lot of people's businesses. But before the internet, people would have those fax machines, those thermal fax machines. I don't know if you remember them.
Yeah.
And, they were challenging. You'd get the information, you get the report, and then you try and get it to the person. That would take almost as much time as compiling the information. So when I saw this, it was like Prodigy came out, and it just, the light bulb went off. They were actually the company that was the number one in the Philly top 100 had used Prodigy to catapult themselves. So I saw that. I was like, wait a minute, maybe we could use that. So then I looked for a company that could help us develop the develop it. So
you had an early challenge that involved technology that was somewhat antiquated, went out and found new technology. And that for 1997, that's an early story of technology of creating a business.
My competitors are actually driving fax machines to the clients so that they would have. And I was like, I didn't want to do that. Well, we wanted to be nationwide, so it was.
You didn't want to have people in each city driving fax machines
around.
That's a great visual.
Sounds like another business.
I know, right? Yeah, and servicing them too, because,
They break down. They broke down a lot.
It's your subsidy business was the Xerox, or Xerox distributor.
So technology has been a driver in our business, actually, even now, so, which maybe we'll talk about.
So tell us a little bit about what you do, because I know you do background screening, but I know it's different from what a lot of companies do.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that, and also maybe talk about the differences between your two companies.
Okay. Yeah, so Yeah. So the difference that I feel like with my company is that, again, it's kind of just, avoiding pain. Like, I don't want to have applicants come back to me and say, you got this wrong. So whereas, some of our competitors, they kind of take the approach of, like, we'll fix it on the back end. So they try and get the information out quickly. They try and process it, as hands-off as they possibly can. And we take a more hands-on approach because I always tell them, when I have a new employee start, I always tell them that you can't unring a bell. So if you send out a report that's incorrect, then, you can't always take that back. Even if you correct it afterwards, it still taints the applicant. So we really try and pay close attention to making sure that our information is accurate.
Well, just listening to this from the outside, people's professional lives are at stake, their careers, sometimes their lives.
We're talking about the two different businesses. American Tenant Screen is screening for landlords and property managers. So we're dealing with where applicants live. And then in employment screening, we're dealing with where they work. So it's really important to us to get it right. And, and that's always been the way I've approached it. So.
Now, the negative to that is it takes a little longer, or does it not take a little longer?
It takes longer, yeah. And it takes more people power. So, So that's been a drawback because then we can't always be as competitively priced. So,
But I assume that your clients understand that. They pick you because they want it done right from the beginning.
Right. They don't want to have to deal with disputes, after the fact. Like, they don't want to have to worry about, because if you dispute a record, then they have to wait before they can actually make the decision. So a lot of people just want to fill that position right away, or they want to fill that apartment, and having the information accurate and timely is really critical.
Yeah, I can tell you, having a career as an executive recruiter for, a million decades, it's really important, not just for what you're saying, but even for the recruitment partners too, right? Mm-hmm. So we would put things through, and if there's a delay or inaccuracies, you've put a lot of work into those candidates, like Mark said, and it's so important to them, their families, but also the companies. But from our perspective too, having a wrong or incomplete background screen is worse than the kiss of death, especially if it's just from an error. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to hear that you have that kind of concierge white glove approach. Mm-hmm. It's definitely worth it.
Thank you.
So I just had a visual about all this. I'm watching, I got hooked on the show Suits that was out years ago. Mm-hmm. It's on Netflix. Anyone watch it?
Oh, kidding?
You guys all watch Suits.
From the very beginning.
So I don't know how it ends, so don't tell me, because I'm only in season 3.
She marries a prince, just so you know.
Yeah, I knew that part somehow. But Mike Ross, the fraud, just interesting how background checks could have changed that whole story.
You'd be surprised how many times people we don't need to background check him because they come from XYZ company and we trust XYZ company, so we feel like they did the screening, so we don't need to. And you just wonder how much almost like whisper down the lane kind of, people get passed from one company to another. And was anybody ever really originally background checked?
Yeah. Hmm. Which of the companies does more business now, American Tenant Screen or Verify Protect?
Well, Verify Protect has grown over the past, I would say, 3 to 5 years. We've grown it. So it used to be 80-20, and now it's probably more like 60-40, and we're hoping to move that for the next year. So move that.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. We have about a minute. Do you want to introduce your question? Because I know where you're going next.
Yeah, so, Marco, this is how we've learned to play off of each other. So, I love to talk about culture and the people side of it. So your business is interesting because you're on both sides of that, right, for people that you bring into your own company as well as who you're placing. So I'm very curious about, how you've seen the market, not just from technology change, but just the market itself in terms of the candidate base or the tenants, what's kind of, how have you just seen that change in terms of the people that you're working with?
Well, I really see right now is that people are moving more to contract workers. I mean, employees want to be contract workers, and employers are learning to adapt to that, and in some cases want that as well. So I think that's been, and remote work has been a big one, obviously, from the pandemic. So people learning how to create culture when you have a remote workforce is really, a driving force.
And how have you done that for the folks that work for your company? What you talked about, you know, you want that high glove, you know, approach. Yeah. But how do you assess and build the right culture for you?
Well,
and if I could just say, you're totally remote, just about.
Yeah, we're almost entirely remote at this point. I have one employee that comes in to you know process mail that comes in. But yeah, I do weekly meetings. I didn't at first, but we do weekly check-in meetings. And and when I check in with people, I don't just check in with their work. I check in with how they are, what they're doing, what their outside activities are and things like that. So I used to feed everybody when they were in the office. I used to buy lunch all the time. So now we just send like DoorDash or something like that.
Well, that's still a very nice touch because people, you know, you get to mix up their looking at the same four walls in their kitchens as their workstations. So I think that's amazing.
I'll mention too, we could go back to this right after our break, which is coming like now. But I talked earlier with Chris about the company culture in terms of the whole idea of vulnerability, you know, and it's a buzzword that we've talked about with other guests. And maybe we can get into that a little bit, how she makes it a little more intimate without making it personal, which is a great jumping off point. So with that, let's take a quick break and hear something about Verify Protect, I believe.
The Art of Medicine is a premier compounding pharmacy that specializes in helping people meet their maximum potential through an integrative and functional approach. Open for 12 years and licensed in 18 states, the Art of Medicine has obtained the prestigious PCAB accreditation, which only 1% of pharmacies achieve. Through optimizing hormones through bioidentical hormone replacement, reducing inflammatory disorders with low-dose naltrexone, and optimizing mitochondrial and cognitive function with methylene blue, the Art of Medicine tailors medication to make you the best version of yourself. This is all done with personalized service and extreme ease of use. They truly embody the best of both worlds. Small pharmacy service and respect with big pharmacy quality and ease. Email or call us today to see how we can help.
So we're back on Founders Forum, and we are live on WWDB AM in Philadelphia, as well as a podcast. So since we're live, I have to say, great job, TJ. We love the voice. We love the music. Great job on the ad. So we were talking about your companies, and we were talking about company culture. And how do you get people to open up, and what's the benefit of doing that in your businesses?
I think initially it started because I want to work somewhere that I want to work. Like I don't want to work in an environment that's, you know, difficult people or anything like that. So I try and create an environment that I want to enjoy working in and with people that I really like. So, you know, I do that. And with vulnerability, like I said before, I'm a terrible liar. So
it's good to be a terrible liar.
Yeah.
So
you see right through me. And so I, you know, if you get caught in a lie, it's always really uncomfortable. So I just take the hard truth first. You know, first and foremost. So a lot of times I share with people, you know, my experiences when I'm struggling, and then they tend to want to share their experiences, you know, if they're having trouble too.
So have you found, I'm curious about how that has helped your retention and longevity of your folks. I mean, because I think it's no secret that the world's a tough place to work, especially the last many years. And I think people, younger workers as well, they're kind of demanding a workplace that looks at them as the human behind the work as well. So have you noticed that it's helped your retention rate, the way that you have built that culture?
Yeah, I mean, I have most of my employees have been with me for 5 years. Like they were with me through the pandemic, which was just, it's just great to have a good workforce through something like that. Like Lauren's been with me over 10 years. I think she's 12 now. So others 5-6 years. My main thing is that what ends up happening is I kind of like to get people who don't have a lot of experience, but they have the right attitude, they have the right values, and then they learn and grow with the company, and then sometimes I kind of have to let them go because they find other opportunities where, you know, they can expand themselves, and, you know, we're a small company, so there's not always a place for some people to go, so that's usually when I lose somebody.
So it sounds like you're also looking at people that also come from the school of life, potentially, and not so, you know, keyed on, I'm going to check your background, and you have to have that 4-year degree. So you look for people that can be molded into, you know, a long-term employee and give them opportunities. I think that's really important, especially in the labor force today.
Yeah.
Chris, before we go on to the future, which the show's a lot about the future for future vision of our founders, to sum up your success and look back in terms of what you've been able to do so far, what do you think were the greatest ingredients to your success, to what you've built in the business thus far?
You know, I think that the ability or the desire to change, to always adapt to what's going on, you know, I just feel like I'm always searching for that next thing, like, okay, what's especially like with the experience with the internet and all that. It's like, okay, there's probably another thing coming around the corner that I want to take advantage of.
So. Changes. there's a friend of mine.
Mark's not going to take an opportunity to incorporate some music in when he can. So.
Well, my friend Ray Lowe, who Ange knows, who got me really into this podcasting business. His brand is the luckiest guy in the world, and he's just a real creative guy. And he had a show called Breaking the Rules, which was on TV in New Jersey, and then he changed it to Changing the Rules, and that was David Bowie's song was the theme song. So, because pretty much everybody that comes on, if you're a founder, if you're an entrepreneur, you have to change the rules to some extent for it to work. You know, most of us are disruptors in some form or another, and you've got to be to kind of stand out. I know you don't agree with that, Sean.
Rules are always changing.
We'll have your chance to talk about that soon on our next show. So, Chris, looking forward, tell me about your three-year vision, and here's the way I ask it. If this is January, blah, early in January 2024, and we're now in 2027, looking back on the last 3 years, what would have to happen for you professionally, personally, if you want, financially, if you want, for you to say that was a successful three-year period in your life?
Well, the main thing I'm really looking at, when we talked about contract workers being a big new segment of the workforce, is I'm working on developing an app that will tie into the background screening world. To help contract workers manage maybe they have multiple jobs, and also help employers, you know, tie into those workers. So I'm hoping that app will be fully developed by
that time. Does this apply to your business as well?
Yes. Yeah, so we would. So, like, if you think about a contract worker, they probably have they may work multiple jobs. Well, every time they go to a job, they have to get a background check, and it's like it's time consuming and whatnot. But if they already have had it done. If they could have somewhere to go where they could say, here's my background check, it's by a reputable company, you know, and then the employer, the person who's hiring them, could look at that background check, and then they would have that information, and so putting it more centrally located.
So in a way, you're creating a depository for universal background checks in a way, kind of.
Yeah. I want to look at it less as a depository. I really want to look at it as, I want the contractor to own their own information, because I think that's privacy is a big concern. So I want the person to have, ownership.
They have access. They have access to it.
They control where it goes, who gets access to it.
You know what? That's a better idea than mine.
Well, I think it's important, too, because it's never been that way, right? You don't know what transpires about your life and background to the employer when you're going through the application process. It just goes into some, cloud somewhere, and you don't know if you get the job or you don't. You don't know why.
Right.
Often.
Right.
Yeah. So, interesting.
So what else? I know you have more than that for your three-year vision.
Well, I personally, I would like to, my son's going to graduate, so I hope that he,
College, right?
Not college, high school.
High school, that's right.
So, he's trying to figure out what he wants to do, and I'm trying to help him with that, but I want it to be his decision, so that's challenging.
Sure,
so hopefully he will
there,
have gotten
done that.
Somewhere so, where he can be, I want him to be happy. And, so that's on the personal front. And, financially, I would like to, I always want to make more money. So,
good
I won't
goal.
Put it, I won't put a number on it because,
So you had written to me about this. Yeah. So I'm going to add a couple things.
Okay.
You said implement your current growth opportunity. Were the background checks that was part of the growth opportunity?
Yeah, that contract worker is the growth opportunity,
And you also said financially not to have financial stresses and be able to do what I need or what want to do, which to me is the definition of financial independence. You're working because you want to, not because you have to.
Mm-hmm.
Is that so?
That, and also to be able to have the financial ability to do, like, if I want to grow this app, if I want to do this, like, okay, now I've got to find funding. It'd be nice to not have to worry about where is that funding going to come from. So,
so we just have a couple minutes left. And by the way, I want to give both of you my book before we leave. It's called The Fiscal Therapy Solution. So it addresses a lot of those issues.
Okay.
So
great.
That's, I never plug what I do, but I'm starting to get smarter about that. So anyway, I know you're a reader. Mm-hmm. What are your favorite books? What do you like to read?
Well, my all-time favorite book is by Rabbi Kushner, Harold Kushner. And he wrote How Good Do We Have to Be, which is different from his and I always thought that was
why bad things happen to good
and
people.
And why he wrote originally wrote Why Bad Things Happen to Good People, which was a very difficult book to read, I found. But I found
it was.
That,
I read that. Yeah.
Very... Yeah. How Good Do We Have to Be was always like because when you run a business, sometimes you have to make decisions that aren't popular or aren't good or don't make you feel comfortable. So, it's like if you always just tried to be good, you'd probably would run yourself into trouble. So I definitely was searching for that answer, and that was that's one of my favorite books. So
I didn't read that one. I'm going to read that one.
Yeah,
we've accumulated quite a library from talking to our guests. So and that's a really important point I think you raised about being an entrepreneur. You're not always, the most popular person in the room if it's ultimately for the right thing.
Right, you have to make hard decisions.
We have time for just one last quick question.
Okay.
If you were speaking to your younger self, what advice would you give you?
Oh, dear.
That's Angie's question, but I knew you would like that one. So.
I think it's just, not stressing so much in the moment, because sometimes you take a lot on in the moment, and so as I've gotten older, I've become more relaxed about things that come, that come up, issues that come up, and trying to work through the problem, knowing that eventually they will end. So
kind of this too shall pass.
Right? Yeah, this too shall pass. That took me a long time to learn that.
Well, that's a great end point, and that's something we all should be thinking about all the time, or be able to use all the time. So, Chris, appreciate you being here today. You'll join us with Sean for the opening of Sean's show, and which will be recorded and to be displayed on the radio sometime soon. And look for our podcast, Founders Forum, on all major streaming services. Have a great week, and we'll see you soon.
We hope you enjoyed your time with Founders Forum today, and you found value to take with you throughout your day. Join us again next week for another episode of Founders Forum on WWDB Talk Radio, and always at the Founders Forum show page at www.dbam.com.